now, Niall, I mentioned at the top of the programme the Sustainable Futures Forum, which took place at University College Cork. You were there to take part in a panel discussion with Éineann Éileanna and Sean Ronayne, and it was moderated by John O'Halloran, Professor John O'Halloran, who's president of UCC.
I was a real pleasure to be there. A really robust discussion looking at what birds tell us about the state of our environment, the warning signs that they're giving us, and the measures we made to try to save them, but not just them, wider biodiversity, for which the birds are the heralds and the representatives. So yeah, really, I was delighted to be invited along in such august esteemed company, and really enjoyed the discussion, I have to say.
Absolutely. Well, I think it's worth having a listen to. The moderator is Professor John O'Halloran.
So we're going to move on to a panel now, and essentially we want to have a conversation about what we've learned, but also what we need to do. And we've heard this morning that amidst of the climate crisis, also we've got significant nature crisis. Here in Europe, our nature is in decline, and with more than 80% of habitats in poor condition. Éineann, can you maybe outline briefly your view of habitat loss in Ireland and in Europe, and why should we be so concerned? And what are the major challenges here, really, Éineann?
Thank you. Well, if I can put out my case to a certain extent, in Ireland, biodiversity loss is caused by land use change, invasive species, pollution, and then climate change. Because really, habitat loss is the root cause of biodiversity loss in Ireland. Now, when you think about it, I know it was already mentioned several times, but to put it into stark figures, boglands and fenlands have gone down from 16% of the country when it was 1.17 million hectares. It's gone down to less than a quarter of a million hectares. It's gone down to 3.8%. It has declined by 77.1% from what it used to be to what it is. It's gone down by that much. And it's worst in the raised bogs. We've only 10% of our raised bogs left. Why? Because these places have been reclaimed for two things. They've been reclaimed for agricultural land and they've been burnt. Peat burning, which is still happening. Now, if we think of grasslands and croplands, as we saw from the EPA report, these cover up to 66% of the country. Now, they're all affected by fertilisers, by reseeding with one or two species, by silage making, by pesticides. So where there were wonderful rich grasslands before, where you were putting back the bits that were missing, they're all gone now, and we have maybe only one or two actual plants. One type of grass, the other type of grass. They're managed in a different way with silage making. So 66% of the country covered with that, degraded to bits. Forestry covers 11%. We saw that on the picture as well. Two-thirds is conifer. It's commercial conifer plantations. Then we have our freshwater habitats, which are different from the fens and the bogs. Freshwater is actual water. Half of our surface waters, lakes and estuaries and coastal waters, half of them, according to an EPA 2024 report, half of them are degraded, caused by nutrient pollution from agriculture and wastewater. I mean, there's very high nitrate, there's very high phosphate levels. Only 10% of the river sampling sites and 15% of the lake sampling sites are of pristine condition. I mean, just five grades, Q54321, and there's only that small amount of them in pristine quality left in good, clean, holy, green Catholic Ireland. That's all that's left. And naturally, this has all increased a huge decline in biodiversity in the last 50 years, over 50%. So you were saying, what are the challenges as I see them? First of all, we the Irish people must realise that this is happening. I mean, us all, academics and people in the know and people who spent years learning about it, we know, but that's no good. The plain people of Ireland must realise this is happening, that it's bad and that it must be fixed. We have to convince them that it's important, that it involves changes in the values that we assign to habitats and wildlife here, that wildlife and habitats are not just the spaces that we don't want. The more spaces we want, we take, and whatever is left, well, sure, can't they retreat off over there? So we need to prioritise restoration and creation of the habitats from the wildlife. Build it and they'll come. I mean, we can't kidnap the curlews and say, come back here and let them off. We have to have the place ready that we can make the habitat, we can plant the stuff, but after that, the animals have their own minds. If we make it, they'll come. But we have to do it. So that's what I think.
Thank you, Éineann. Listen, I can see your passion after 50 years. It's just fantastic. But we need that kind of passion. To your point, we need to be able to tell that story. We need to let people understand the importance of this. And maybe if I could move to birds then. We saw beautiful sounds, Michonne, sounds that we no longer hear in our chorus in the mornings. 63% of bird species are in decline. people use this phrase, red species, listed species, amber and green, and that's some sort of traffic light system about the danger or not of the species. And we know a significant number of them are at risk in Ireland. Can you provide some perspective, Niall, for why we should be concerned about bird loss, connected with the habitat loss, and what have been the key drivers from Birdwatch Ireland point of view and your own experience point of view?
Absolutely, John. I think it's crucial when you look at those figures that it's a shocking state of affairs that fully 63% of Ireland's birds on an all-Ireland basis are either red or amber listed, which means they are a threat of extinction here in Ireland. I think it's important to know that that's done, as I said, on an all-Ireland basis, not just in the Republic. So Birdwatch Ireland, in conjunction with our colleagues in RSPB Northern Ireland, look at the trends, what's happening to species, ones that are declining, ones where their habitats are at severe risk. And we see the fact, therefore, yeah, two-thirds of our birds are on the way out. And this is something that's often, I think, quite hidden from people because they see plenty of birds around the place. You know, you look out the window, you will see birds. You'll see robins and blue tits coming to your garden. So people think that it's not as bad as it seems. But the birds that can best tolerate humans and what we've done to our environment, they're our garden birds. Now, they're wonderful, and it's a great way to introduce people to nature. But I think that that's something that we need to bear in mind. The vast majority of our species do not benefit from our behavior or our actions at all. In fact, they suffer because of them. And I think that when you're looking at the drivers of those declines across Ireland, it boils down very much to habitat loss. That can be for various reasons. It's because the habitat just completely destroyed, it no longer exists. It's because it becomes degraded, it becomes polluted, it becomes disturbed by people, it becomes threatened by alien invasive species and new predators like American mink, which the birds have evolved no defense. I think the other reason why it's so important to use these birds as flagships is that they are at the tops of their food chains, and they're the most readily observed form of wildlife that we have. We rely on, for the statistics we have about birds, it's all about citizen science. We can mobilize thousands of bird enthusiasts across Ireland to submit their data and their information to us. But those birds, they're going down, or in some cases up, because of the food and the shelter that they require. So it helps us to understand better what's happening to the invertebrate populations, what's happening to our native plant populations. And we do that through the medium of birds. Also with birds, there's something particularly about them that captivates the public imagination. I mean, we all saw and heard everyone's reaction in the room when we heard Sean's wonderful sounds there. There's something primal about it. It just speaks to us. And I was sitting there, my eyes closed, listening to that snipe drumming, and it transports you. It brought me back to my childhood, and I used to hear that. There's a reason why organisations like Birdwatch Ireland, who rely on public support, put birds like robins and puffins on our membership leaflets and our posters. It's an emotional pull. And that's sort of, I suppose, why we have to look at birds in this way. It's not just about saving the birds themselves. It's about saving that whole ecosystem that they depend on and that their decline signals to us that something has gone radically wrong with. And in doing that, of course, we are benefiting us human beings as well. Because we like to kid ourselves that we're apart from nature. We're an animal like any other, and we would be absolute fools to forget that. And when we see our fellow animals suffering in and declining in such massive numbers, it's really concerning. So I think we need to pay attention.
So what we're picking up here, Niall, and the work the Birdwatch is doing and others, is that in some ways birds are like a canary in the mine, aren't they?
Yes.
They're actually telling us something about the quality of the habitat, the functioning of that habitat, and once that starts to decline, we lose it. And as Sean has given an example, some of the species are already gone, which is quite extraordinary.
It really is, and as Aina said, on our watch, this is happening in our lifetimes, which is really very concerning. And I think that the analogy of the canary in the coal mine is a perfect one, not just because it's a bird, but because they really are signaling what's happening there. And I think, you know, when we're looking at the declines on the screen there since 1970, and it was nice and green at the start, and it's become blue and grey at this end. But the fact is, even by 1970, if you took someone in a time machine, let's say from 200 years before that, they would be wondering in 1970, where have all the birds gone? Why does it sound so different? We accept the reality that we knew as children, and that becomes the baseline for us. And yet that was already severely depleted. So I think we do need to bear that in mind. And I think as well that it's important to note that it's not just a pity that the birds are disappearing. Isn't that sad? It's an absolute tragedy and a wake-up call for all of humanity, because we're going to suffer the same fate. You know, when you look at the birds disappearing, they're not going extinct because they felt like it. It's because the world that they evolved to live in no longer suits their needs. And that's our fault, squarely our fault. Be it climate change, be it habitat destruction, be it pollution, be it disturbance, all of those, it's our fault.
Yeah, and what's really interesting, I'll go to you now, Sean, but what's really interesting to me to that point, Niall, is that those species that have become extinct, their final frontier was the west of Ireland for the most part. And it's often those areas we have the least pop and eventually disappear. And in some ways, if you look at that from a human point of view, that's where the Gaeltachts are at the moment. So there is that beautiful phrase in Irish that says, Cún an Gidí, which is the hare's corner, which is that corner of the field where the farmer kept for nature, for the hare in this case, but as a species to protect habitats. And, you know, so connecting the habitats with the species is critical. Sean, if I can go to you, I mean, what I thought was striking listening to you is Derek and the team run the Dawn Chorus from Koskinny, which is exactly where you kind of had your breaking ground, if I could use that phrase. And then you've taken your journey over to Barcelona and into Catalonia, and you've seen a whole range of things, and poignantly you've pointed out beautifully by sound the magnificence of these wonderful species. Can you tell us more about that experience that you've had that helps you with your advocacy in protecting birds and habitats?
Absolutely. Birds are everything to me. You know, they're my neighbours, they're my family, they're kin. So to know that this group of species that gave me so much all my life are in such trouble, you know, really, really hurts me. It's the last thing that I want to see happening. And it wasn't until recent years that I really realised that this was happening. You know, I guess when I was younger, Niall touched on it there, shifting baseline syndrome. If you're born into a green sky, this is normal to you. Mm. If you're born into an Ireland where there's a single pair of ring ouzel, that's normal to you. So it wasn't until kind of later on in life that I realised that, you know, actually there was a much greater abundance of birds in the past. And so this is what really drives me to do what I do. I think I crossed the line between storytelling, art and science. And I think I discovered through accident that this is a really powerful hybrid of tools to really move people. Of course, science is so important in delivering facts and seeing exactly where the dial is at. But to really move people, and to move people that may not have an interest in birds in the first place, you need to touch their hearts and to share the sounds, these beautiful sounds. You know, I can't take credit for these sounds. I just capture them and I share them with people. But to share those in context, I think it really captures people. And I think that we need to reconnect and fall in love with these birds. And birds are just my special area. The same can apply to all manner of organisms. But to do that, in my opinion, is a really powerful way of bringing people on board and making changes.
And maybe just moving, my memory of the program on television that you did was that you recorded jellyfish amongst a range of other animals. So maybe just, we've talked about birds and birds are important, but maybe you might just tell us a little about other sounds that you've heard.
Yeah, so like every day is a learning day. And I feel like even if I had 10 lifetimes, I couldn't learn everything that I wanted to learn or that there is to learn out there. And that's beautiful. And it scares me and it saddens me to know that many of the things that I could learn may disappear before I get a chance to learn it. And what I did learn is that everything makes a sound. And so I bought this underwater microphone, a hydrophone, and I dipped it down. And it's another world down there. Another
the skellies, world. Wasn't it skellies?
Skellies,
my memory. Yeah.
Skellies. And, you know, after 3 o'clock, the tourist boats left. And there's a sonic purity down there. You can hear this clicking sound. It's the sound of hundreds of prawns clicking and communicating to one another. And then I heard this sound, and it sounded like somebody farting in the bath. And it wasn't until... It wasn't until later on that I discovered it was fish communication. So fish, believe it or not, we haven't catalogued all of them, but they all have different, unique sounds, just like birds. And this sound is achieved by... So they have a swim bladder. It's a gas-filled chamber, which they regulate to move up and down in the water table. They have a stridulating muscle over this that they vibrate. And depending on the species, they make different sounds. So I got it down to family, gadoid species, a member of the cod family, sounds like somebody farting in the bath. And you know, this is funny. It's beautiful. It's wonderful. And that's just scratching the surface.
See, and I'm going to go back to you if it's okay. I mean, the European Union Nature Restoration Law is the first continent-wide comprehensive law of its kind. It's a key element of the European Union Biodiversity Strategy, which sets binding targets to restore degraded ecosystems. In your experience, and you've a lot of it, Aina, how do we take transformative actions to reach these targets that have been set? And what scale of action is required? There's a lot going on there now, so big European continent, what transformative steps might we take at the scale of action?
This is the European Restoration Law, where we set binding targets to restore degraded ecosystems. We voted for this. We're good members of the EU. And what do? We do what we always do in Ireland. We set up a committee to look at it. And we have. We're quick out of the traps. We've already set up an independent advisory committee for restoring nature. And it must submit a nature restoration plan to the EU by September 2026. We need to be urgently restoring our wetlands, our forests, our marine environments now, not only to improve resilience in the face of climate change, but in fact to restore places for things to live. We can do it, but we have to be able to do it in the face of the opposition. My father, my grandfather, my great-grandfather got the land back from the landlords. He drained it and by gummy and not putting water in there for an old snipe when we have been growing wheat here for years. We have to get away from that attitude. We can't plant trees on this land or we'll never be able to put a crop of barley on it again. Which actually is not true. You can put trees in your land, you can harvest them and you can have to replant. But you don't have to plant that same area. You just have to replant the same amount of space, but it can be somewhere else. So you haven't locked up the land forever with a few old bloody trees if you want to go back to farming in 40 years' time. So there's all these perceived things that putting land, putting things for wildlife is only what we can spare when we're finished with it ourselves. There's an attitude change.
We need to be biased to action rather than biased to talk, yeah. Sean, you gave a... Sean, you gave a really great example of the work Dave Sutherby and those did for Redneck Fallow Up. And do you want to just maybe, and Niall, I'll ask you to comment on it as well.
Of course.
But Sean, you experienced it as an ornithologist and someone recording. So you, as you went to look at that habitat, what did you feel and see? And is that the kind of thing we should be doing more of?
Absolutely. I've been to, because of the fact that I set out to record every bird in Ireland, it brought me to all corners of the country. I've seen everything, you know, the good, the bad and the ugly. And I've been to some really... really pristine gems. You know, I refer to them as fragments of hope because these are places that we can aspire to and these are the blueprints that we can expand upon. Absolutely, so this site in, what's the name of it again?
Annamarsh.
Annamarsh, that's it. Annamarsh is a spectacular.
Belmullet Prince.
That's it, yeah. It's absolutely spectacular. So we slept overnight alongside it. Well, I didn't sleep, to be honest with you. I was up all night listening. And it was just a cacophony of wonderful sound. So
a symphony. A cacophony is an awful noise.
Yeah, you're
symphony,
right.
You're
a symphony, I like
symphony.
That.
Not yeah. A cacophony.
No, it was beautiful. A beautiful symphony. So, like, I sat out there, and because of the fact that they've restored the habitat for redneck fallow up, when you restore habitat, there's so many wonderful knock-on effects as well. So snipe were back in numbers. There were orchids all over the ground. There was just a wonderful splash of colour. Now it was like Fort Knox. There was an electric fence. There was a barbed wire fence. And this was to keep us out and to keep the sheep out and to keep the otters out. But, you know, it was absolutely fantastic. I visited Owen Dalton's wood recently. You may have heard of it. Owen Dalton's famous Irish Atlantic rainforest. And it knocked my socks off. And I honestly stood there and I felt like I was in another country.
Oh.
And I thought that, you know, this is Ireland, and this is a window into the past of how beautiful the landscape used to look and can look again. You know, we know that because of the work of these people, because of the work of Birdwatch Ireland, Owen Dalton and the Dave Sutherbys of the country, you know. And these places, they fuel me. They fuel me with hope and fire to continue on. Because I think hope is really important, because without hope, what do we have?
Can I interject there?
Yeah.
Because I'm so old. My first job in 1971 for the Department of Lands was to go to Annamarsh and to do an ecological study of Terminkara Lake. And there was a queer bird down there because we were botanists. Birds were from the other department, that was the zoology department. We didn't do biology in those days. We did botany or we did zoology and there the twain would meet. So we were sent off to do, myself and Michael O'Connell, who's the professor, or he's probably retired now, nobody ever retires, professor of botany in Galway. And we went off out to Annamarsh. And the Redneck Fallow Up was there, they were doing all their twirly dances. We, even as even as botanists, Stephen the wool botanist, we were intrigued. We stuck the camera onto our binoculars.
We will convert you eventually.
No. We actually got pictures of them and everything. And that was the habitat they were in before it was destroyed. Mm-hmm. We got all the different plant communities. We showed the areas of open space, the mm-hmm. fact that it was all calcareous, what happened, and that there was a light amount of cattle grazing that kept the vegetation down, not sheep eating every morsel. Light, because it was farmed. Yeah. And then these birds were there. And then for some notion, after it was all written up and everything, that they felt if they took the cattle off it and left them, it would be great in case a cow walked on one. And then, of course, it all began to grow up and that destroyed it. Yeah. But the knowledge that the grazing of the animals was actually part of it. But we were there, well, like you're saying, in, you know, Fado. I was that Fado. I was there before it was destroyed and heard it the first time around.
And you're still alive, and that's recovering.
I'm still alive. And the birds are back. And the women do all the work. Yeah. Women do no work there, the men do all the work. I always like that balance.
And there's a common thread here that when we have groups like Birdwatch Ireland and others, but let's focus on Birdwatch for the moment, we're actually working with landowners and people to actually protect and restore these habitats. So you might share some of the experiences from your point of view.
Absolutely. I mean, that's absolutely vital. When you're looking at NGOs and conservation charities like Birdwatch Ireland and Irish Whale and Dolphin Group and Irish Wildlife Trust and many, many more, you look at the disparity between the funding that those organisations receive and the vested interests that are ranged against them, and how there's often a battle there. People realise they can bog these charities down in court actions, in things that eat up their funds. We have to realise that these organisations are doing this for the good of all of us. Mm. The vested interest that we have is all of you in this room, all of you watching online. This is what it's about. And that can lead to short-term loss of profit for certain of our vested interests, but we need to bear in mind that actually long-term, it's the only solution. And I think that when you're looking at working with landowners, lots of people coming on board with that in farming communities and in other industries in Ireland too, that the only sustainable future that farming has is working in cooperation with nature, farming biodiversity. And farmers and landowners who do that, I mean, they may take a financial hit, and they deserve to be paid for that. They deserve to be compensated for it because they're benefiting all of us. This is what Ireland produces. I think when you look at the Anna Marsh example there, that's a great example of working with local landowners, buying land for reserve, but also, to go back to the European Union funding, because that's often a very important source of funding for these projects. In that case, it worked beautifully, because what you do is you look, okay, why has this bird gone? We know the reasons. Can we correct them and reverse them? Yes, we can, quite simply. It just takes a small amount of money in the grand scheme of things, working with local people, and then you're bringing back the phalaropes. But you're not only doing that, you're bringing back all the different invertebrates that live in that water. In doing that, it's brought back corncrakes into the meadows around there. Those reserves, the two Birdwatch Ireland reserves on the Mull Peninsula, now hold the majority of Ireland's population of great yellow bumblebee, a wonderful species that'd be very hard to get funding for just on its own. But it's actually when you use the phalaropes as your flagship, that's how you get them in by the back door. I think that's really important. And talking about the EU again, I think that it's important to remember that thanks to two very crucial pieces of EU legislation, the Birds and Habitats Directives, enshrined into Irish laws, the Wildlife Act here, we have some of the finest nature protection laws on the whole planet. So we need to enforce them. We need to take them seriously.
We can talk plenty,
I think that's really important.
Well, one good thing that we didn't mention is that we now have biodiversity officers in every county in
absolutely.
Ireland.
Absolutely.
But that's a recent thing.
I joined Birdwatch Ireland in 1972. And Birdwatch Ireland has been around a long time. And when I've seen the evolution during that period, and I think we're touching on it here, and certainly in the university we're beginning to learn more about what we refer to as interdisciplinarity.
Yes.
And what we mean by that is you need all the disciplines, but you also need people to talk. But the fundamental piece of that is respect, whether it's the respect for the landowner or the farmer, and opening up the conversations that are respectful, that people have to earn an income, have to raise their family, have to do all the kind of things that happen, and at the same time, let the ecosystem function in a way that's at its best. And I'm struck a little bit that we've got to be careful that we don't kind of put fences, to use your phrase, Sean, to put the fence around it, and that's over there and the habitats are there. Is that fair? Is that evolution happening, do you think?
I think it absolutely is. And I think that sometimes you see certain vested interests in society try to pit different people against each other. And that's not the case in reality at all. I think that when you see that type of thing happening, you need to realise that there's reasons why they're trying to sow those kind of divisions. I think when we look at farmland birds, the most rapidly declining group of birds in Ireland, they wouldn't exist without farmers. We need farmers. We need farms. It's absolutely vital, and it's really important that we're working hand in hand with landowners, and that people see the benefits of that, and that nature isn't seen as a threat, and also that nature is not seen as just a luxury for the good times. It's something that's crucial for the bad times.
But my experience of working with landowners is that they love it. I mean, they probably know more about some of the habitats and species than many of us coming in to learn. you're involved in the Tree Council, and obviously that's another community of people. So we've talked about farming community. There are other communities that are advocating and working. Is there anything different we need to do in that space to protect habitats?
Yeah, well, I mean, that's true. I mean, it's not all just the farmers, and the farmers are not the enemy, as, sure, you know, sometimes it's portrayed. I mean, the Burren Bio high nature value farming,
yeah,
is a great example of how that actually works and happens. But it's in the Tree Council, again, you have Irish people are great. They either love trees and will lie down in front of somebody cutting it down, or they absolutely hate trees. Mm. How dare those nasty trees drop leaves in my front garden? I mean, there seems to be no actual middle ground at all. They're either the enemy or they're the friend, but now the twain shall meet. So this idea of trees being a good tree or a bad tree, I mean, trees are the only way that we'll get carbon out of the atmosphere.
Yeah.
I mean, photosynthesis is how it's doing, and we have 11%, if we even have that now in Ireland, the least forested country in Europe.
Yeah.
And I mean, now with trees having blown down with storm mown, and looking at how we should in the future plant our trees, it doesn't mean
we don't have them.
And I'm letting what Owen Dalton and Richard Nairn and people like that do, letting land be reforested, yeah, naturally by letting fencing out graters and letting the trees come back is great, but you get no recognition at all from that. If you do that to your land, you didn't plant it, you're not getting grants for that at all. You've taken it out of commission. So that there's, as you say, farmers have to live.
Absolutely.
So I mean, expecting them, yeah, to be nice to nature, would you give up half your job and give your salary off to somebody else,
yeah,
because it's good and you have to suffer and Mr. and Mrs. and all your children have to,
absolutely,
suffer because you've been a good man. I mean, that's, nobody can expect that. We need to have people making laws up at the top and coming down from the top and doing them and making them happen. And we want to be pushing them. We want to be making it happen as well. We want to be shouting for it.
Sean, you obviously, when you're recording, it's quite a solitary and needs to be. You had your dog and that's great. But also, the communities that you engage with, and so we've heard about different communities here, the community that you're engaging with in that advocacy for protecting species, what would you add to what has already been said?
Yeah, so the job that I've done for the last few years certainly wouldn't have been possible without many people, and it gave me great insights into, you know, different aspects of nature conservation. As everybody's touched on just now, farmers play a key role in everything, and as you said, they know the land better than anybody else.
Mm.
And I've seen and met some wonderful people. And I think that this is key for everybody to work together in harmony. And of course, there was the NPWS, which I worked with, and Birdwatch Ireland. They brought me to a lot of amazing sites around the country. For example, the ring ousel, it was down to the last pair. And you know, there's a lot of great things going on in Glenveagh National Park. But again, this, you know, it's all reliant on funding, and I really think that we need to be putting more money into nature restoration and conservation in general.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, you might join me in thanking the fantastic panel for this fantastic.
And our thanks to Professor John O'Halloran, President of University College Cork, and his team who made that recording possible for us tonight. That's all we have time for today. My thanks to Niall Hatch, Enya Lana, and Terry Flanagan. Visit the website anytime you like, rte.ie/Mooney. Until next time, goodbye, goodbye, goodbye.